This is Free Talk Live. We'll give you the toll-free call-in lines here momentarily where you can join us and bring up whatever is on your mind. The us in studio tonight is Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And Chris, you've brought several good things to the table tonight. You've got one about one of your favorite people in the world. My tongue is firmly planted in my cheek when I say that, Mr. Elon Musk. You've also got something about the Senate GOP's new health care bill, and I'm using air quotes there. And as you often point out, when people talk about health care in the United States, they're generally talking about health insurance,
yeah,
not actual treatment for health.
Nope.
And this new bill, and I've not actually read the article, but my guess is, based on what you were telling me, this new health care bill is all about insurance. It's not actually about the care that people receive for their health.
Right. And no conversation in Washington in the foreseeable future is actually going to be about health care. It's always going to be about premiums. It's always going to be about what does the plan offer that that this side or that side is going to propose.
And what are we mandating that the plans wind up covering?
Exactly. Yes. It has to have birth control covered 100% and with no co-pays. When do we start using
it's
got to
include things for coverage for like pap smears and mammograms. Doesn't matter, Chris, that you're a 50-something-year-old man.
Right.
And you have no use for pap smears and mammograms.
But I'm covered.
Don't assume his gender.
Exactly. But yeah, it's some of the insanity that Obamacare brought to the forefront. And we were trending there
Shouldn't
anyway.
Shouldn't we call it Gingrich Care? Because it really started as Newt Gingrich's alternative to Hillary Care back in the 90s.
You could call it that. You could call it Romney Care. You can pick one of dozens of different politicians.
Let's just call it by its actual name, the PPACA.
We could do that, or we could just call it socialized health care, which is what it is, too. So, yeah, again,
it's a version of socialized healthcare. It's not the only version.
True. Absolutely true. So this story comes to us from CNN. And just as a little bit of a summary, the GOP is putting forward yet another plan to do away with Obamacare, which basically means rename it and make a couple tweaks to it.
All right. This whole repeal and replace.
I like the first part, Daryl.
So do I.
I always thought they should just repeal and just stop. That's what needs to be done.
Yeah. But, you know, politicians love to do this thing to where we're not just going to repeal something and we're not just going to wind up changing it. We're going to repeal and reenact.
Right.
That way you can't very easily see what is being changed.
And the thing that I think a lot of people don't pick up on is that in every one of these changes, what it is the government trying to fix what the government screwed up the first time they tried to do it.
Right.
And that's all we're going to be talking about.
They're trying to untie the Gordian knot.
Right. And that's just, you know, it makes as much sense as untying a Gordian knot.
And for anybody that might not be familiar with the Gordian knot, Chris, how did that wind up getting undone?
With an axe or a sword? I think a sword.
Yeah, yeah. It was just, you know, like
whack it in half, and
yep,
that's how you
went.
Severed in twain.
Wait, what are you talking about?
You don't know about the Gordian knot? Okay,
I don't.
Please, Daryl.
So the Gordian knot, and Chris, you know, fill in here if I'm incorrect somewhere. It's from like ancient Greece. Possibly mythology, possibly real, part legend, whatnot, but there was a claim of whoever can untie or undo the Gordian knot would rule all of Greece. And if I recall correctly, Alexander the Great went and tried to undo, and he looked at it, and he realized that it was such a cluster that the only way to undo it was to just pull out his sword and whack it in twain and just cut it in half. That's the only way to untie the Gordian knot because it's such a ball of, you know, stuff.
Sure.
Did he win?
He hacked it in two, and then, yeah, he was like, you know, the first real emperor of Greece and united all of the city-states.
Yeah. But what it's come to be now is a metaphor for an intractable problem, the solution to an intractable problem. When things just get so complex and so convoluted and complicated, the only way to do it is literally to take the sword to it.
Right.
And to me, and that's why I love Daryl's analogy, is healthcare. This is not something we should be trying to tweak and come up with this little change and say, well, we'll cover this and cover not that. No, government needs to get out of it completely, and we need to stop mandating how business works.
Like,
healthcare is a business.
What do you think would happen if all of a sudden right now, like, just every government healthcare program was just completely gone?
Just wipe them all out.
Like, what would happen, though, in terms of, like, do you think, like, if you did it all at once, that it would cause any type of, like,
temporary turmoil? I think what you
would
see,
because you'd have doctors and their whole like every doctor's office that accepts it would have to like redo all their systems and all their patient inputting. I don't think
they'd have to redo much other than just stop doing it. That's coming from somebody who's worked in the insurance industry.
Right. It would change some of the way they do their billing, but it wouldn't be like, oh, Medicare ceases to exist. You now have to re-input every one of your patients into your computer database.
But like, what do you think would happen, though? You think doctors would just be setting their own prices and stuff like that?
I hope so.
Yes.
I hope so. They did that in Oklahoma City. There was an outsource, whatever you call it, a surgery place that was facing these rising costs of doing, you know, knee replacements and things like that. So what they did was here's a crazy idea. They posted all their rates.
I think they take Bitcoin as well.
They might, but they posted all their rates. They ended up getting into basically a pricing war with all local hospitals because they were all charging way too much.
Yeah, and the name of it is Surgery Center of Oklahoma.
Yeah, they ended up getting most of the market share, and they ended up profiting higher. So. Your question, it's sort of unrealistic because we'd really never have a time when we just flipped it all in a day. Government can never move that fast. But let's say we had a program that took, within 1 year, all federal regulations regarding healthcare and health insurance go away. I think what you would see is all healthcare providers and everyone involved in this space trying to figure out how they can make money off of it. With this new change,
right.
I think they would come to the realization that now they have actual competition.
Yeah, one of the problems that we currently have, and your calls and thoughts are welcome, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. One of the problems that we currently have is the federal government says that if you accept Medicare and Medicaid, then you have to charge everyone the same amount. You can't give cash discounts. You can't give preferential treatment. And the insurance companies get to decide what to cover and what not to cover. And because doctors know that certain things the insurance companies are going to challenge, they'll do extra tests just to make sure that, you know, something gets paid for.
Right.
So I think, you know, absent all of these government mandates of you have to bill X and Medicare only reimburses a percentage, then you'll see doctors actually only doing the tests that need to be done instead of, oh, you know what? We only need to do this one test, but I'm going to do seven more just to make sure that I wind up getting reimbursed for something.
Right. And everyone in healthcare would suddenly have to compete. The health insurance industry would not go away, but they couldn't operate the way they have.
Right. And as you mentioned, you know, with this Surgery Center of Oklahoma, where they actually wind up putting their prices out front.
Right.
You would see that with a lot more doctors instead of right now is, you know, how much is a doctor visit? Well, it depends what your copay, who do you have, what's this, what's that. Doctors don't just say it's $45 to come see the doctor.
Most doctors don't know.
855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Your thoughts on healthcare? This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We're talking about health care, more specifically the Gordian knot that is health insurance. Your calls and thoughts welcome. But if you want the newest and freshest stories and perspectives on current events from those who value liberty, head on over to freedomsphoenix.com. Their daily dispatch is the best way to stay up to date on science, technology, historical findings, liberty news, government overspending, and the rise of the police state. That's freedoms with an S, phoenix.com, freedomsphoenix.com. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And to the phones, we've got Tom calling in from Baltimore. Tom, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Good evening, gentlemen and lady.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to speak with you again. I believe you're the three that I spoke to a week or maybe 2 weeks ago when Daryl was still recovering from his low oxygen experience.
Oh, yes.
Yes, from that altitude.
Daryl, how are you doing, Daryl? Are you completely recovered now?
I am completely recovered, yes.
I think we had you in one of those barometric chambers for a while, right, to adjust from the 300 feet difference between Lancaster and Keene, New Hampshire.
That's so funny.
Well, let me get off of Daryl and get onto the topic. Heather very astutely pointed out some of the problems that are caused when people don't follow the law. I'm not talking about our bureaucrats who are idiots to the law. I think they don't care what it says. They do as thou wilt.
And I believe the U.S. Supreme Court said that it doesn't matter whether bureaucrats actually know the law or not, as long as they're acting in good faith.
Yeah,
I think
like
I'm
a,
you know,
would be like a
paraphrasing a little bit.
The Supreme
but...
Court is, wouldn't it?
Right.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. Nothing in government these days would surprise me. What shocks me, though, is how much of a juggernaut and how far along into the depths of really chaos we've come from something that really could have worked quite well. I'd like to see us get back to that. But what Heather pointed out relative to simply withdrawing this stuff, it is important because, you know, when the federal government does things like this, it affects people. And they assume a certain responsibility when they do that. And they open themselves up to a certain amount of liability. And that's where the problem lies. Because who pays when the government has to pay? The people do.
Right.
So what she's talking about is
the other thing.
Fact that, pardon?
Oh, I was going to say... The other thing that you repeating it back to me kind of made me think of is like all the doctors. I know from having worked in insurance and brokering Medicare supplements that pick up, you know, what Medicare doesn't cover. I know that whenever we'd have to raise our prices to accommodate the higher deductibles for Medicare, we would always end up being the bad guy, even though it was, you know what I mean? So when government tweaks things, mm-hmm. even though it's all kind of caused because of government, you know, the high prices in general, it's the doctors and the insurance companies and stuff like that that end up getting like the brunt of it
right.
from
so,
the people that
yeah,
don't
so
actually understand
government
politics.
Creates a problem and they make somebody else look like the bad guy, and then people say we need government to fix this problem that government created.
And right. legally Daryl, we do become responsible. You know, there's an old axiom of law relative to silence being acquiescence. If we don't complain immediately, we let certain amount of time go by, we go along with it, we are acquiescing to what the government has said, we are essentially agreeing by our silence, and by extension...
But, Tom, we're not being silent. We are not being silent about this, but... There are the people that say, well, the fact that you still live in the United States is your consent to everything
do. No. I'm talking about specifically what Heather said. Relative to doctor's offices, if they're going along with it, they're participating, they're taking an active role. I understand what you're saying. You're speaking out about it. You've got audio and video recordings of what you're doing and what you're saying. Probably to have something in writing in the form of an affidavit submitted would be even more helpful. But again, that old maxim of law does stand true, and that is if you're silent, it's looked at as either fraud or agreement. And
you mean like, why don't all the doctors and stuff in our communities just ignore Medicare and start making their own rules and doing their own things? Like, they're kind of
at least fight it. Because otherwise, by their silence and by their going along with it, they create what you're talking about, Heather, is a fiduciary responsibility.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where they get hooked. And that's where we as a country are right now, because you've got insurance companies that went out of business, said, okay, we're out of here. You've got people that depend on this thing. I've always maintained that Barack Obama won as soon as the Supreme Court, that ridiculous decision by that criminal Roberts, came down that it was constitutional, and he twisted it and twerked it.
I think it also has to do with like supply and demand, in a sense, right? Like, if there's that money, that revenue stream coming from the government via Medicare, there's going to be doctors out there that, you know, are looking to cash in on that. I mean, and you can't really blame people for, you know, trying to just feed their families, even if it is through government means.
Let me hop in here, because that's the whole thing. That is the government-created problem. The government-created problem goes back to mandating that people not choose health care if they would like to have health care, or companies choose to have health care. It was government mandating that they must have health care.
Right.
And when that becomes a mandate, now the insurance companies have a big stick they can use to pressure providers and every company in the healthcare field to say, okay, here's how we're going to play this. So, you know, if you want to practice medicine, it's very difficult to do without playing the game.
And it even goes back, you know, like 7-8 decades. Tom, thank you for the call. It goes back, you know, a long time ago when I forget exactly what the, you know, law was that passed through Congress, but I believe it was during the Great Depression time. There was, you know, basically a wage cap of, you're not allowed to pay your employees more than X, but you can give them benefits,
right?
And that doesn't count towards the wage cap. So what a lot of employers started doing is, oh, well, we'll provide you with this and with that and a housing allowance and the health insurance and this, that, the other thing. And so then a lot of companies started providing these benefits, health insurance. And then I believe it was during the Nixon administration, there was the whole thing of, you know, like HMOs and this and some other thing.
Companies of a certain size basically were then required to offer health care.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Insurance.
And, you know, it incentivized, instead of you, Chris, buying a health insurance policy, your employer buying your health insurance policy. And now with the PPACA, it's mandated that if there's over, what is it, like 5 or 10 employees?
Yeah, I don't know what the exact, I think it, I always thought it was 50. Why do I think that's the number?
It might be 50, and that's where I'm getting the 5 and the 10, because, you know, a 5 and a 0. But whatever, you know, it's, you know, if you're a medium-sized business, then you must provide health insurance.
And that's why we saw an explosion the first year after this thing got passed of businesses that were reporting 49 employees.
Yep. Your calls and thoughts. Welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live.
Have you wanted to get into Bitcoin mining but don't want to deal with the hassle and frustration of operating the mining hardware? Let pool.bitcoin.com handle it for you, like I did. For an investment of as low as $129, you can have a lifetime mining contract and support the Bitcoin network. If you already have mining equipment, you're invited to join pool.bitcoin.com. It's the most profitable pool for miners, paying 120% of the block reward. That's pool.bitcoin.com.
This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we've been talking about health care, kind of, and health insurance, all because, we were sort of giving some backstory before delving into this article, Chris, that you brought in from CNN about the Republicans' newest health care bill that they unveiled earlier today, apparently,
they did.
To, quote unquote, repeal and replace Obamacare.
The title of this is New GOP Healthcare Bill Could Allow Cheaper Plans with Fewer Benefits. Washington. Senate Republicans unveiled their newest healthcare bill Thursday as they continue to search for the majority needed to repeal and replace Obamacare. Now it's up to senators to decide if they like it. The new bill includes major changes to the original. One of the most significant was the inclusion of an amendment by Texas Senator Ted Cruz, which would allow insurers offering Obamacare plans to also offer cheaper bare-bones policies. The amendment was included in an effort to earn more conservative support, but could also drive away some moderates who fear the amendment could drive up premiums for those with pre-existing conditions. Again, we're not talking about health care. We're talking about health insurance.
Right. And, you know, this reminds me, and I'm going to go off on a sports thing here for a moment. Many years ago, Allen Iverson was in a press conference. And you probably have heard the thing before because it's just so absolutely ridiculous, where he was asked a question about something and he said, "We're not talking about the game. We're talking about what I did in practice." "We're not talking about the game. We're talking about practice." And he just kept repeating that for like 2 minutes.
Oh,
and,
God.
You know, that sort of is the same thing here. We're not talking about health care. We're talking about insurance.
Exactly. And that's all we talk about.
We're talking about insurance, not health care. We're talking about practice, not the game.
It also contains significant new funding for opioid treatment and money for states meant to lower premiums for high-cost enrollees. But it would keep two Obamacare taxes on the wealthy and maintain significant cuts to Medicaid, meaning 15 million fewer people could be insured by the program by 2016.
So these
2026, I'm sorry.
These taxes on the wealthy, this is the so-called tax on Cadillac programs, I believe.
I haven't read the text of the whole thing, but I know the Cadillac policy tax was one of the things they were concerned with. And interestingly, in all my life, I've never come across a Cadillac plan. Guess where I finally did for the first time?
Earlier today when you were looking at what Congress has as a health insurance plan?
That would be one of the times I've come across Cadillac plan. The second was when I got involved in local town government here in New Hampshire and found out that our employees all had Cadillac plans.
And Cadillac plan, for those that may have only ever heard the term but not ever heard a definition of the term, it's basically, you know, like a high upscale sort of coverage.
Yeah, it's really, really, really good insurance that comes at a really, really high price.
Yeah.
But you know, and I had a problem with it because it was our town's tax dollars going towards it, which we then scaled it all back. But if people want to buy a really good health care plan, why should they be penalized for buying a really, really good anything?
Because the 1% or something?
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to continue with this article. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is still in search of the 50 votes he needs to pass the bill. He could only afford to lose two senators, but the hope for leadership is that a few changes may be able to finally get Republicans on a path to repeal and replace Obamacare after 7 years of campaign promises. 7 years of campaign promises.
Yeah. This is one of those things to where I think that, you know, the Republicans are just going to wind up using it as one of their campaign pledges, but never actually do it.
I don't know.
And then in, you know, another decade or so, it'll just sort of drop off. Like the whole thing in 1980, when the Republicans, the year after the Department of Education was created, "We're going to abolish the Department of Education."
Right.
And then sometime in like the early to mid 90s, they just sort of stopped talking about it.
We got to spend more on the children. Already on Thursday, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky said he wouldn't even support the motion to debate the bill on the floor. Senator Susan Collins, a Republican from Maine, also told reporters that she would not vote for the motion to proceed unless she saw significant signs from the nonpartisan scoring agency, the Congressional Budget Office, that the cuts to Medicaid would be less severe than she anticipated. Quote, the only thing that can change that is the CBO announcement, which comes out on Monday, indicates that there would be far fewer in Medicaid than I believe there are now, unquote, Collins said. Emerging from a meeting with fellow senators Thursday, Republicans were cautiously optimistic, with many saying they needed to sit down and read the bill before they made any final decisions.
Well, that's always a good idea to actually know what the hell you're voting on.
No, you've got to pass it so we can see what's in it.
Well,
Nancy
Pelosi.
I can almost
guarantee
you.
I think the majority of people that vote are voting based on faith anyway, or party lines. I mean,
yeah, and when you talk about these bills that go before Congress, I should pull it up. I'll do that while we're on the show. I'll pull up the full text, and I'll see if I can calculate how many pages long it is.
And also, you know, try and maybe figure out how many times it says, as directed by the secretary, referring to the Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Right.
Which, I tried reading the PPACA back before it wound up getting passed.
Right.
And I lost count by like page 5 of how many times it said, as directed by the secretary.
And kids listening at home, what that simply means is Congress was too lazy to actually say what the law is. So
right.
They just granted immense amounts of power to unelected bureaucrats
right.
to decide what's best for you and your
Secretary
family.
Of Health and Human Services, you get to write all of these policies. We're just going to sort of give you some guidelines of what we want you to include in it.
Yep.
And it's like 1,200 pages of guidelines of what we want you to include in it, but we don't know what you're actually going to write, how any of this is going to be implemented.
But we trust
which,
you.
Of course, is why Nancy Pelosi was, you know, not telling a lie when she said we have to pass it to know what's in it, because there was almost nothing in it that actually did anything. It just instructed the Secretary of Health and Human Services to write some policies.
And we do this all over our government.
I don't do it.
Well, let me rephrase that. Congress does this all the time. They get it in their heads that something's got to be done and we've got to move some money in to address this problem. And then all they do, for the most part, is hand it over to unelected officials that have been in D.C. for God knows how long, have been taken to God knows how many lunches and dinners by lobbyists, and we'll get their marching orders from them.
Right.
And then we just assume that everything's going to work out all right.
See, that's
and
why I feel
it never
like,
does.
That's why I feel like Congress, in a sense, I had this conversation the other day where I'm like, government, right, is kind of like parents. They're kind of like, you can have an abusive parent and you can have an abusive government. You can have a good parent, though, so can you have a good government? So when you're like all these
sure.
these dinners that, you know, our elected officials are going to and stuff like that, I think of it like as a mom, like, you know, sitting down with my daughter's teacher being like, yeah, so what are you going to be teaching my kid? You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of mindset that I think some of these representatives might have. I don't think everybody in Congress is necessarily corrupt. I think there are probably some well-intentioned people there. But, you know, I can honestly say, like, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, man, I'd really hate to be in their shoes. Because when you're in the shoes like that and you have all of these people, it's like there's no way you're pleasing everyone. Like, there's going to be people like, you're a crook, you're a fraud, you're this,
yeah.
you're that. No matter what decision you make, even if you give power, like even if you get rid of the health care, like now all the people that are out of something, like you're the bad guy. You know what I mean? Like,
so what? Sometimes right isn't popular.
Your calls and thoughts. Welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We're talking about the health insurance problems that were created by government, and now government's coming in to make a solution to a problem that government made.
That'll work.
And, you know, like, it's big money for some businesses, but you don't need money to do business on Simbi.com. It's a sleek, easy-to-use marketplace where you trade your talents for other people's services and abilities. You can forget the old economy. This is your economy, Simbi.com. You won't believe the diversity of services listed on Simbi. Hundreds of thousands of people are acting within the symbiotic economy. Go create an account at Simbi.com. That's S-I-M-B-I.com. Take a look around. Post your services. That's Simbi.com.
All right, Daryl, we'll go back to the story a little bit. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski, one of the GOP holdouts, was unhappy the reporters had seen a summary distributed to lobbyists before she had seen the bill. Really?
This is interesting, and it's one of those things to where you kind of have to wonder, was this intentional, or had she just, you know, maybe not been in her office when copies were being distributed?
Nah, it was, I'm sure all this stuff is a well-orchestrated leak fest.
I'm sure it is.
All right, we'll give it to this paper, but not to this one, and then we'll let him, let the senator see it. Asked if she was upset by how the process unfolded, she said, yes, I think that as a courtesy to those of us who were actually making the decisions, that we would actually have the opportunity to see it first, Murkowski added. A major question remains whether President Donald Trump can use his bully pulpit to actually move senators. Trump has lobbied for Republicans to move quickly. The president said Wednesday he would be, quote, very angry, unquote, if Republicans can't pass the bill.
And I'm sure he'll shake his tiny, tiny little fist in indignation if they don't. We'll jump back into this a little bit. But first, to the phones, we've got Stefan calling in from Ohio. Stefan, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
I'd like to talk about an issue that's been in the news for the past couple of days, more so than it was before, net neutrality. I've spoken to a lot of people, and it seems like it is one of the most popular policies in the United States, maintaining net neutrality. And when I try to make a free market argument, a lot of people just shake their heads. Why do you think that is?
Well, I'm going to guess, and Chris, since you also have a theory, I'll let you take a stab at it.
What was the question?
Well, why some people are upset about the possible repeal of net neutrality. And net neutrality, it's another one of these things to where government has gotten involved, and there's no real good solution to this as far as the options that are currently presented in front of Congress.
Of course not.
Can you give like a little backdrop of net neutrality for...
Well, this goes to my point. And Stefan, you can either agree with me or not, but my basic argument is there's no two groups of people that actually agree on what the heck net neutrality actually is.
Well, the common agreement that people have is net neutrality basically means an internet service provider cannot favor certain sites over other sites in terms of speed. Like, they can't make YouTube really fast, but, you know, make, you know, Facebook really slow, for example.
Or make freetalklive.com really slow, because their Facebook has billions of users. Free Talk Live, not
very,
so
very
much.
Very few, sure.
Now, are you guys a fan of that? I mean, do you think service providers should be able to discriminate?
Well, here's the thing. There are people that wind up, you know, basically fear-mongering of, if we don't have net neutrality, I always forget if it's if we do or if we don't, but the fear is, you know, one way the internet service providers will say, all right, you want to get online, it's going to be $40. You want to go to sites that aren't Netflix and Facebook, you've got to give us another $20. You want to go to this, then it's going to... And right. Basically, the internet would become sort of a cable sort of thing to where pick and choose what websites you want to go to.
Do you mean user fees, kind of like Bitcoin that we just talked about the other day? Is that what would happen? There'd be user fees? So you got to pay $1 to go to this website. You got to pay $1 to go to this website.
It's this fear-mongering, and here's why I say that, because the internet's been around for going on 20 years in popular usage.
Right.
What happened for the first 15, 18 years when nothing really existed? Nothing.
It started a couple years ago when Verizon wanted to put together their own little video streaming service.
Right.
So they throttled Netflix. And to me, that just makes sense. You have a video streaming service, you want to promote yours first, but a lot of people say that goes against my free speech provided to me under the Constitution and that kind of thing. That's what I hear all the time.
Sure. The thing that I argue with is, well, and everybody's so concerned. It's like, you know, Comcast in my area. I mean, what if they start to do that? Everybody has Comcast. Well, why the heck does everybody have Comcast? Because governments come in and granted a limited number of licenses,
right?
And eliminated competition.
And that's why I said of the options provided to Congress right now, there's
correct.
Not a good solution because
right.
government has created this problem in the first place, even though it's not the federal government that says Keene, New Hampshire can only have three internet service providers. It's the local municipal government, but you have governments at varying levels that are creating this sort of, you know, monopoly, duopoly, triopoly sort of thing.
Sure.
And then the people, Congress, you need to do something about this monopoly, duopoly, triopoly thing that we have going on here. Well,
right.
no, just get governments out of it at all levels
yeah.
and then actually allow the free market to operate. And that's not an option that I'm seeing presented before any government entity anywhere.
I think we're always... Go ahead.
No, you first.
No, I was going to say, I think we're always going to keep coming back to these problems as long as we have this government involvement where they're insisting that they have to play a role in basically free speech and in technology.
I'll have to dig the article up again, but a couple years ago, I believe AT&T sued a municipality for allowing another ISP to come into some city in North Carolina. I'll have to dig that up. I heard about it.
Would not surprise me.
Not me either.
A little while ago. But one of the most common things, as that I hear, is, well, it violates the First Amendment. Well, this typically comes from more liberal-leaning news sources, like the Young Turks, for example, is where I heard that argument. But when you think about it, these are the same people that claim, like, oh, the Constitution only applies to muskets. Does that mean that the First Amendment only applies to, like, printing presses where you push it down and it goes like,
yes. And scribes. You have to have a scribe hand copy everything. Stefan, thank you for the call. Let's go to Tom calling in from Nashua. Tom, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
I listened to the cop calling up last week after I made my comments about police brutality and the remedy to police brutality, where that guy in the Bronx took out a New York City policewoman. And first of all, the cop went on the air, and the standard procedure here is when anybody speaks out in favor of liberty is accused them of being insane. I mean, calling me crazy. This is their standard way to try to intimidate people into not speaking in favor of
Tom,
liberty.
The reason people say that you're insane and that you're crazy is you advocate killing public officials.
No, I don't. I've never advocated killing public officials.
You have encouraged people, and you've celebrated when cops wind up dying.
I've celebrated,
How is that
I've
not encouraging? When you celebrate
something, is
that not encouraging more of it?
No, you can't.
If I celebrate getting a piece of cake, that means that, you know, I want somebody to bring me more cake. If you celebrate cops dying, cops to die.
Is
that true or not true, Tom? Do you want more cops to die?
I want the cops to start behaving themselves.
And if they don't...
I agree.
In any case...
Those six officers that
beat the crap out of Kelly Thomas or whatever it was, dude, I'd be celebrating like hardcore if those six got into a car accident and died. Like, I'll be the first to say it. Like, those guys are thugs. They're evil. They're like, I mean, they kicked the crap out of this guy, this homeless man.
Right.
Like,
what they did
there's
was
nothing
horrible.
Wrong right. with celebrating when human beings like that drop off the face of the earth. It's like saving oxygen.
I don't celebrate humans die. Tom, thank you for the call.
I do.
Your calls and
ones
thoughts.
Like that, yeah.
Your calls and thoughts. Welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We'll get back into this health insurance, healthcare thing, plus your calls and thoughts. Welcome. This is Free Talk Live.
Do you want to help build a better financial system for everyone? Join Dash. Dash is digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast and easy. fees are low, and transactions are confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime, for just pennies on the dollar. Get started at Dash.org. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. Join Dash and help us create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. Find out more at Dash.org and get your own Dash wallet today. That's Dash.org.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Kicking off our number two in studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we're going to hopefully get back into this healthcare.
Wait, I wanted to share a couple more thoughts on that last subject there.
Go ahead.
Just the last, hold on. The last subject, for those that are just tuning in, there was a caller that called in talking about what he deems to be police brutality, and he's a what we call a chronic caller. He calls in quite frequently and has done so over the last decade or so, and he celebrates when any police officer dies, whether, you know, it's day one, they just put on the uniform and they've not written a ticket yet, or whether they've been on the force for 20 years and did something egregious. He celebrates the death of human beings that he sees as aggressors, whether, again, they have done anything egregious or not.
And my thing is, I don't know if, you know, I never heard him make any other statements other than what I just heard on the air a minute ago. And from what I heard, it sounds like what he's saying is that, you know, to give an example, most people walking down the street, you see somebody getting beat up, you see somebody getting, you know, a woman getting raped. Most people are good people and they'll step up and they'll stop it and they'll, you know, defend the person. They might even, if you're a gun carrier, you might even use lethal force to save this innocent victim. Unless, of course, the person doing the raping or the beating happens to be wearing a police uniform, which for me is like, you know, why is that? You know, like is it not better to be tried by six than, what is it, or tried by 12 and then carried by six, right? Like, I mean, if you see a cop, like in the Kelly Thomas case, if those of you that haven't seen it, this innocent homeless man sitting on a curb, harming absolutely no one, was killed because he was beaten by six police officers so badly that it broke some bone, like lodged, like what was that bone right there on his forehead, that they beat him with the back of a taser so bad that it broke this bone that most people.
Yeah. Plus they tased Kelly Thomas in the face like 20 times the entire time he's
crying for
help.
He's crying for his dad. It was the most heartbreaking video I've ever seen in my life.
I believe he said, "I'm sorry," somewhere around.
He was pleading with them
times,
saying, I'm sorry. And this officer, right, that essentially started the whole thing, as he was putting on gloves, says, "You know, I'm about to F you up." Like, right. This was like a pure case of like just brutality. And that's the type of person where I'm like, dude, I would love for a good Samaritan to have just come up out of nowhere and like pop this guy off in defense of the freaking poor man,
unfortunately,
crying on the ground. But because they're police officers, right, they just... Nobody will.
But that's not what Tom is talking about. And let me pull up some quotes from when Tom was a state rep here in New Hampshire almost two decades ago. Quote, "It's unfortunate that cops do make it necessary to kill them when they're waging a drug war, and I view cops as enemy officers." He said that he's too chicken to kill them himself, and added, "Nobody will ever be safe until the last cop is dead."
No, see, I don't agree with
that. If that's something other than encouraging people to kill police officers, then please explain that to me.
Right. And there are a lot of people out there that take that view. I think it's ridiculously...
They're frustrated, though.
Well, they are.
They're frustrated that nonviolent people keep getting thrown in cages, and I don't think going and killing people. I don't think violence is the answer unless you're in imminent danger. You know what I mean? And, you know, in that case, I think we leave it up to a jury to decide when people are justified and when they aren't. But it is a sad situation.
This is what you get with government. This is part of what comes with government. When the police work for government, the prosecutor works for government, the judge works for government, and this is all the whole criminal justice system. And
the jury, by default,
is now working for the government
because they're getting $20 stipend.
Right. And you have this indoctrination,
in
government
officers?
Schools that says you must always obey what a police officer says. Never resist a police officer.
Right.
They're your friend. They're always right.
Oh, you have school police officers. I had one when I was in school.
But the thing is we're indoctrinated from a very young age to simply do whatever we're told. That's what the purpose of our public school system is, to always respect authority. And when it goes off the rails, we act like we're surprised when government, which holds all the power and holds the lethal force, and in some areas, the only ones allowed to possess lethal force, uses it. And, and you're also talking about people in positions of authority that are attracted, for whatever reason, to that position of authority.
There's something that I saw on Twitter a couple days ago that, you know, very accurate. It said, do what you're told and you won't get hurt is not what you tell people that live in a free society. That's what you tell people that live in a concentration camp.
It's a good point. It's a really good point.
Yeah, and that reminds me of that article I read the other day that somewhere, I was in Keene, they painted a blue line on the road.
Sure.
Yeah, that was actually talked about on Free Talk Live a couple nights ago, where down the middle of Marlboro Street, which runs right in front of the police station, they put this blue line right between the yellow lines because blue lives matter, thin blue line, something, something, even though the National Highway Transportation something another said, you're not allowed to do that. Blue is not a legal color to put on a roadway. It is not a legal road marking.
Yeah, there's a positive side, it is, and it was pointed out that Keene, New Hampshire's local government is practicing civil disobedience.
Yes.
Yeah. No, my whole thing, though, is I do want to point out, like, I like police officers like our friend Pat there from Arizona. Like, I think he's a nice guy. And I think, you know, obviously I don't like the crimes without victims, you know? I think if police were just, you know, taking like child traffickers, rapists and murderers and serial killers and stuff like that off the street, fine. But the facts is that they're going around like enforcing a lot of nonviolent laws. And the language in that article from the Free Keene one, right, is referring to police officers as like serving, right? A lot of the same language that you hear when you talk about our military that go over to Iraq and Afghanistan. They're almost using that same language now when referencing police, and police are getting all these badges and these, you know, awards and pins. And I'm thinking that psychologically, like, the government's making it so that police have more of this like warlike mentality when they're walking the streets of their own community, and they're treating, you know, a lot of these people in this war on drugs as like enemy combatants. And so you have like,
it's
a lose-lose situation for both the people, you know.
And then, you know, you've got small municipalities. Keene, New Hampshire, about 23,000 people when college students are in town. The police here have a ballistic engineered armored response counterattack truck. The small town or city of Berlin, New Hampshire, about 9,000 people, including all of the people incarcerated in the two jail facilities there in Berlin, they have a ballistic engineered armored response counterattack truck. For those that may only know it by the friendly name of Bearcat, it's this armored vehicle that was at one time used in a war zone, an actual war zone. And then they're bringing these things and putting them on the streets in small towns across the country.
When we declared the war on drugs, we declared war. I say the country did. The country declared war on its own citizens. And now we act like we're surprised when police dress militarily, act militarily, disregard, you know, the rules of combat. When they have tactics that are designed, you know, basically for the military.
Not just tactics, but also the weapons. The Pentagon 1033 program, and we covered this somewhat in depth when it was big in the news about, what, year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Of all the thousands of pieces of surplus military equipment that the Pentagon gave to local governments. Why does a local police force need a grenade launcher?
The other thing that was in the article referring to all the officers that died in the line of duty is just heartbreaking to me, because it's like, think about a child now, right, that loses his dad to the war on drugs. So now he doesn't have a dad because his dad intervene in a consensual agreement between two people to sell a plant.
Your
you know
calls
what I mean?
And thoughts welcome. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And Bitcoin.com is the most unique online destination in the Bitcoin universe. Want to buy some Bitcoin? Find out how to do it there. You want to speak your mind to other Bitcoin users? Their forum is always open at forum.bitcoin.com. There are no bigger believers than the team there at bitcoin.com. That's why this site is a one-stop shop for everything you need to get into Bitcoin life. Plus, you can play games using Bitcoin at games.bitcoin.com. Learn more at bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com. We started the show talking about the Republican health care, health insurance bill thing, and there's still more to get into on that, but we've got full phone lines.
That's
and,
more fun.
You know, sometimes that happens when you wind up bringing up, you know, controversial topics, if you will, specifically police brutality. Let's go to Fred calling in from Idaho. Fred, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Well, I don't have a lot to say other than greetings to you, Chris. And I wanted to comment specifically on the recent Philando Castile situation. You know, we used to pretend that law enforcement was here to protect and serve. And in that instance, if you look at the video, which is painful to watch, admittedly, yep. A conversation could have ended right after I pulled you over because your taillight was out, sir.
Right. And that could have been the end of it.
Please take care of that right away. That's for your safety and the safety of others. Just wanted to make sure you were aware. End of story. Goodbye.
It could have ended that easily. Sure. But if you go back and you listen to the transmission that the police officer made before pulling over Philando Castile, he said, he's got a wide set nose. I'm going to pull him over because he might fit the description.
I did catch that.
So the whole thing of the tail light being out was just a ruse and, you know, completely made up. That's not why Philando Castile was pulled over. But had his tail light actually been out, it could have ended as easily as you just suggested.
So do we know, was there any investigation by the Worthlet defense attorney to find out if his taillight was out?
I think I could tell in the video. I think the taillight was actually out. But at that point...
So you got a legitimate ruse, if you want to call it a ruse.
Right.
Did the bank robber have his wife and three-year-old child with him when he bumped off the bank? I mean, good Lord, help us.
Yeah. There was another example... down in Florida, a state attorney got pulled over. She happens to be an African-American woman. But she was just pulled over, and the cops come up, and they're like, you know, license and registration. She hands them that plus her ID card saying she's the state's attorney. And they just start,
Have a nice day, ma'am.
Your license plate didn't come up with anything when we pulled it up, and also your windows are tinted a little dark, and it was really hard to see. They just immediately backpedaled because they didn't get a Philando Castile. They got somebody else who's in their club. You know what I mean? They had to change everything about how that stop would have gone down.
Well, they didn't have to.
And I think they made the decision to.
But right. I've seen things to where mayors of small towns in South Carolina wind up getting pulled over in Myrtle Beach, blow a 0.00 on the breathalyzer, pass the roadside Olympic test, but still wind up getting charged and convicted with a DUI, even though there was nothing in their system.
Wow.
But is it a DUI or is it driving with a wide set pair of nostrils? I mean, that's kind of the question that we all are trying to get answered here, isn't it?
Right. And that's the sad fact. I take this whole thing back to the war on drugs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When we make whole segments of our population the enemy. And that was, you know, when we look at the war on drugs, the origination of that was racism.
Right.
You know, that was...
I mean,
I don't want to say that's really what it was. No, I'm talking about what Nixon and Haldeman and Ehrlichman all talked about.
Yeah, but even then, who said that they knew what the heck they were talking about?
Because they did.
It could have been that, you know, people were freaked out. You know, maybe a couple people had a bad experience on drugs, and you get one lawmaker that's like, okay,
no, you're going to ban it
from everyone.
To be very clear about that, what they said was...
I disagree.
I don't
know. I'm just we have to
go after the blacks. Because they're opposing us politically, so we're going to come down on heroin.
Yeah, but we have to go after the hippies, really? Because there were like African slave owners that were extremely wealthy as far back as you know.
What I'm saying is that the roots of the war on drugs. We have to go after the blacks because they're opposing us politically, so we're going to make heroin really illegal, really bad, and we're going to go after the hippies, the peace freaks who were opposing the war in Vietnam. We're going to do that by going hard after marijuana.
And don't forget, Chris, that there was also, I forget who said the quote, something along the lines of black people smoke marijuana and play jazz music and date our white women.
Well, that's going back to the 30s.
Reefer Madness or something?
Same era. But the point is the war on drugs was brought up as a ruse to realize a political gain.
Right, and then changing... The term from cannabis to marijuana was to demonize it to, you know, go after the Mexicans.
The Hispanics, sure.
Maybe.
Fred?
And this stuff is all rooted in money, both the war on drugs and the ongoing military machine. It's all about money. There's big, big money players. We got military industrial complex. We got prison for profit now. God help us. I mean, it's crazy where we're at.
Plus, you've got things like asset forfeiture to where they can just take your money and say, well, we think that it's connected to something illegal, and you have to prove that it's not.
Why else would you have money?
I like money. A lot of founding fathers are all rolling over in their graves.
They're rolling in their graves. They're screaming and yelling from the grave.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great hearing from you, Fred.
Thanks for the call. Let's continue with Robert in Vermont. Robert, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Okay, so I don't know if I've asked you this question before, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it again, and that is, the United States, does it have the climate to be able to grow poppy?
I don't know what the growing climate needed for poppy is.
I'm sure that's something that, you know, like
if you found a horticulturist, they would probably know the answer.
I imagine there's some people somewhere in this country growing some poppy.
I'd imagine that if you Googled that, you'd probably get an answer, and then you probably get a confirmation the next day from some drug enforcement officials who could tell you
that's exactly why. That's why I would never do that. Because
I'll Google it. I'll take one for the team, okay, guys?
Funny enough, I just tried to Google, and my VPN disconnected itself.
See?
Yes. I was wondering because it's such a... I mean, over here, it's specifically in Bellis Falls, Rockingham, maybe even as far up as Burlington and Rutland. It's a complete washout over here. I mean...
Google server
Bellis Falls has confiscated hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of heroin. Where is it all coming from?
Probably the U.S. government. Robert, thank you for the call. 855-450-4.
This is Riley Blake, producer of the Free Talk Live Daily Digest. In addition to the Digest, I host my own weekly podcast called Anarcho Agenda, providing you liberty-oriented content without all the statism. Subscribe to Anarcho Agenda on iTunes, Google Play, or visit anarchoagenda.libsyn.com. That's anarchoagenda.libsyn.com for further details.
This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio tonight, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we started off the show talking about the GOP's new repeal and replace health insurance regulation bill thing that basically they're just going to make some minor tweaks to the big giant boondoggle that is the federal government involvement in healthcare.
Right.
The story from CNN, and we've covered, you know, like the introductory portion of here's what some senators had to say, where Lisa Murkowski said that she was upset that some journalists and lobbyists wound up getting to see it before she did. But what's actually in this thing? Well, we're guessing that the journalists there at CNN wound up being able to see it because they've got a write-up here.
There you go. What's new? The revised legislation has $45 billion in opioid treatment funding, a top request from senators like Rob Portman of Ohio and Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, as well as a state stabilization money, as well as in-state stabilization money aimed at lower premiums for high-cost enrollees. And high-cost enrollees, people with pre-existing conditions and things like that. But another concern for moderate senators that the Senate bill makes steep cuts in Medicaid funding was not addressed in the new version. The original bill calls for slashing $772 billion from Medicaid by 2026, compared to current law leaving 15 million fewer people insured by the program. Daryl, I think it's important to note that whatever number you pick there, none of them are sustainable.
Right. And again, you know, the wording here is very interesting, where it says the original bill calls for slashing $772 billion compared to the current law by 2026, meaning that over the next 9 years, there's going to be a total of $772 billion less spent on Medicaid than what is currently projected to be spent. So
right.
They're cutting some proposed increases. They are cutting proposed increases. It doesn't say
right.
that, you know, there's going to be actual cuts or that there's not going to be increases. They're just cutting the rate of increase.
Right. And that is Washington's modus operandi. That's what they do. They say, you know what, we're going to cut this program. By cut, what we mean is we thought we were going to spend $10 billion more on it. We're only going to spend $8 billion more.
That's a 20% cut.
We saved the American people 20%, $2 billion. It's insanity, but somehow this country keeps sending the same people back, which basically says to them, you have a mandate to operate business as usual. Status quo rules the day.
Right.
In a retreat from a key GOP promise, the bill would also keep two Obamacare-era taxes on the wealthy. That came as members said they were worried about the optics of cutting taxes for the rich while also slashing funding for subsidies that go to help low-income people to buy insurance. Retaining the taxes, which saves the federal government $230 billion over 10 years. No, it doesn't save the federal government money. What it does is costs the American taxpayers $230 billion over 10 years, provides McConnell money to help boost the stabilization fund, sources said, but it's also likely to infuriate conservative lawmakers and lobbying groups. The legislation would allow consumers to use their health savings accounts to pay their premiums for the first time, which Cruz called, quote, very significant.
So here's something that, you know, why was there ever a prohibition on using a health savings account to pay your premium?
Because a health savings account is not like a savings account. Not like I go to my bank and I say, savings bank of Walpole, I'd like to open up a savings account. I'm going to save money there for my health care. You can't really do that. You can do it as long as you don't tell anybody that's what you're doing it. But if it's an employee-run health savings account, that comes with pages and pages and pages of federal regulation that decides exactly what that account can be, how much money can go into it, what it can be spent on.
I remember when I had health insurance back 7, 8, 9 years ago when I worked for an airline. I did not initially have it, but then they rolled out this thing of, well, if you get the high deductible something something, then we'll give you money in a health savings account.
Yeah.
And I wound up basically getting the same amount of money in an HSA of what I paid for a premium.
Sure.
And I was able to use the health savings account to pay my chiropractor.
Yeah, or Band-Aids or aspirin or all kinds of things like that. You know, it's they're a pretty useful idea. My issue with them is they're just overregulated.
Right.
This is one of those areas that we absolutely never needed federal government involvement in. Let us have savings account. We'll put money in them, and then we'll use it when we need it.
Right. But, you know, again, it's baffling to me that apparently there was some federal prohibition on using a health savings account to pay a premium to a doctor. So
go to
the doctor and your visit is $47. Sorry, you can't use your health savings account because reasons.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Also Thursday, GOP Senators Cassidy and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina proposed an alternative approach to replacing Obamacare that would keep much of the federal taxes in place and sending that money to the states to control.
So basically, what Senators Lindsey Graham and Cassidy are wanting to do here is wind up having the federal government be the middleman in what is essentially money laundering.
That's a really accurate way of putting it, Daryl.
So instead of you sending the money to your local state government,
right?
No, you've got to send it to the federal government. And then they send it to your local government.
Yeah, they're going to take a piece of the pie.
Exactly. They got to get their skin.
And then add strings to the money.
Absolutely.
There's always strings to the money.
Sure. And if we're going to give you all this money back that your citizens paid to us, but you have to spend it in these ways. And that's,
yeah, it just means that whoever, you know, like whatever states and stuff, you know, rub the backs of the politicians when they're campaigning is the one that's going to reap the most reward.
True.
And my guess is a lot of this is going to wind up being opt-in programs to where, oh, well, if you increase the police in, you know, fighting the drug war, we'll give you extra money to where you can give it to old grannies that need Medicare.
Right. And I'm not even going to say I expected something. I didn't expect anything better out of the Republicans. I expected them to put forward Obamacare Lite, and that's basically what we have here. A bad nightmare version of Obamacare Lite.
Right, but you know, again, considering that what was passed as the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, commonly called Obamacare, was basically a bastardized version of Gingrich Care that was a response to Hillary Care back in the 90s,
yeah,
I can't say that I really expect the Republicans to do anything major because it was their idea in the first place.
And it puts a glaring light on this whole thing. And this is the takeaway for everyone is this is not about health care.
Right.
This is about cronyism. This is about moving money around. This is about keeping in place huge federal bureaucracies while throwing out some buzzwords that they feel are going to attract Republicans to support it.
It's about like return. It's about one word, and it was the final word of that last sentence that you just read, control.
Sure.
It's all about control. We need the federal government to take the money and then distribute it to the state governments.
Because we don't know what to do
because
with it on our
control.
Own. Right.
It's all about control. Jumping on here a little bit, they say that one of the primary reasons that they're having a hard time agreeing is because they're working from the Obamacare template, particularly federal control of health insurance. Your calls and thoughts welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Your calls and thoughts welcome on whatever is on your mind. We've spent the better part of the first 2 hours talking about health care, health insurance, and we'll move from one overregulated industry to another here in just a second. But how would you like to wind up saving some money? And when I say save some money, I'm talking about somewhere between 5 to 20, 25% on things that you were probably going to wind up buying anyway. Well, you can do that when you go to saveatpurse.com. I just had a couple of things arrive in the mail today. I've been doing some repairs on my bicycle. It was a 21-speed. The gears stopped shifting. And I decided, you know what? I'll just convert it to a single speed. And I've had parts coming in that I've saved between 15 to 20% on.
Nice.
And should be able to have the bike all back together tomorrow when that rear hub comes in. And I got that at saveatpurse.com. And what you do to get these bigger savings, you put things in an Amazon wish list. You then import the wish list into your account there at saveatpurse.com. You select the discount that you want, and then you fund the account with Bitcoin or some other cryptocurrencies using the built-in Shapeshift integration. And then you wind up, you know, several days later, generally, you wind up getting the items in the mail. You then go back to saveatpurse.com. You release the escrow, say, I got my items. And then the person that bought the items from Amazon gets the Bitcoin, you get the items, and everybody's happy because you saved big time. Saveatpurse.com.
And wasn't it Sanders that said, what do we need 21 speeds on a bicycle for anyway?
No, Bernie Sanders said, why do you need 23 different types of deodorant?
Okay. My mistake. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So you're going to a single-speed bike?
Yeah.
How does that work when you're climbing a hill?
Pedal faster.
Just checking. Just wanted to make sure you had a plan for that.
Yep. And, you know, there's not a lot of hills that I wind up pedaling over anyway, although there is that nice, fancy, like, $2 million footbridge.
Yeah. It's a dandy.
I use a couple times a day.
Thanks, government.
Yeah. Thanks, Obama. No, actually, thanks, Obama, because there was some federal grant.
Yeah.
I went to that bridge opening, and the local officials were talking about how much the community got together and rallied to support building this thing, because some local group raised $100,000 of the $2.1 million.
Sweet.
And then the rest of it was federal grants.
That's a lot of money. $100,000, that's a lot.
What is this bridge made out of? Gold?
Gold.
Concrete and pre-rusted I-beams.
And libertarian tears.
And I'm serious about the pre-rusted I-beams.
A $2.1 million bridge.
Yes.
Footbridge.
I would have done it for half the price.
Footbridge, would you?
Yeah.
I'd actually carry people across for a year for $2.1 million.
And then there's another one on the southern side of Keene that I've not used yet.
Yeah.
But apparently the newest footbridge, there's actually a tunnel that goes up under the road right next to the bridge. Which makes no sense to me. Like, why build a bridge over the road when you've got a tunnel going under?
Some people like to go uphill, Daryl. Some people like to go downhill. You got a little something for everybody.
I dated a guy that did roofing once, right? And I guess he used to make, like, I think it was, like, $15 an hour to do, like, shingle, and then $18 an hour to do rubber roof or something like that. But whenever he'd work a state job, they call them rate work.
Right.
He'd make like something like $48 for shingle and $54 an hour for rubber roof. I'm not even joking.
Yeah. No,
like,
no, it was insane. I don't doubt it at all.
And I'm like, I don't get you. You're doing the exact same work, but because it's paid for by government, you're getting paid three times as much.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like,
because when you do a job for a government agency, they don't really have a bargaining chip to use.
No.
And then sometimes, though, he'd get put into a higher tax bracket by the end of the week if he worked any overtime or whatever, and it ended up, like, offsetting it. But it was weird how the whole thing worked.
Well, then we have laws requiring government transparency in a lot of things that say, you know what, you know, we have to put, you know, what our budget is out there. Government, and I've done this, it's like the hardest place you can ever negotiate from because, okay, well, we're going to put $50,000 in this line item to fix this roof. And then you put out a request for proposals and a request for bids, and guess what? Everybody comes back at $49,999.
Yeah, well, the other thing, too, my dad was telling me, I guess one of my uncles worked with a bunch of guys pouring the cement foundation for some of the windmills they put up on the Cape. Mm-hmm. And I guess when he showed up there to bring my uncle lunch one day, he was like, there's like three of them pouring concrete and like 10 just standing around talking, but they're all probably getting paid back because they're getting paid by the state.
Yep. And so, speaking of roofs and overregulation, Chris, apparently there's some kind of something going on with rooftop solar.
Well,
who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, I know. And I thought this story was interesting because rooftop solar has been a big thing. You know, St. Elon Musk has come up with this idea that we can put solar on every roof by basically using, you know, shingles that are...
St. Elon, patron saint of cronyism?
Yes, yes. The patron saint of cronyism, Elon Musk. But, you know, when you live by the lobbyists, sometimes you die by the lobbyists. And that's what this story's about. This comes to us from the New York Times. Over the past 6 years, rooftop solar panel installations have seen explosive growth, as much as 900% by one estimate. That growth has come to a shuttering stop this year with a projected decline in new installations of 2%, according to projections from Bloomberg New Energy Finance. A number of factors are driving the reversal, from saturation of markets like California to financial woes at several top solar panel makers. But the decline has also coincided with a concerted and well-funded lobbying campaign by traditional utilities, which have been working in states' capitals across the country to reverse incentives for homeowners to install solar panels.
So one thing that I remember hearing probably 20-plus years ago when, you know, solar first kind of started being a thing, it was...
outside the realm of science fiction, it was things that people were actually doing.
You can buy a solar panel, and then you will never have a utility bill again.
Right.
But what wound up happening is very few people actually buy the solar panels. Most of the companies will say, we will give you the solar panels, and then you wind up buying the electricity from us, and then we do something and you get an incentive of something going back into the grid and something.
Yeah, it's gotten more complex because of more cronyism. But way back in the day, before all this regulation was involved and all this cronyism, if you bought solar panels, you could do one of two things with them. You could charge up batteries and you could save that energy for when you needed it. That was one thing you could do. Or you could do a grid tie system, where basically what happened was you would be powering your own home, but any excess would flow into the power grid, and they were required by law to
not
buy
everywhere.
It. Not everywhere, but in most places required to purchase your excess. And that's why it was really attractive.
Right. Because I know several years ago, probably about a decade or so ago, my dad wanted to put up a wind turbine in his front yard. For just that scenario that you said of, you know, wind up generating, you know, enough to power stuff and then sell back to the grid.
Right.
But Alabama Power said, we're not required to buy your excess, so we're not going to do it. And then this is one of the questions that, you know, libertarians have to ask themselves of, should there be a requirement that the only utility that exists in the area that exist because there was a government-granted monopoly, should they be required to purchase excess energy?
That's a good
and
question.
Again, it's one of those things of, they would not be the only energy provider absent government involvement.
Right, right. And that's what we see across the country. In most places, you don't really have a choice of your power company. You might have a choice of where the supply comes from, But right. There's likely only one transmission medium, and that's the wires that run to your house, and they've been there forever.
Right.
So anyway, we'll get back to this story. Again, the decline has coincidentally occurred during this period of lobbying by the traditional utility companies. Utilities argue that rules allowing private solar customers to sell excess power back to the grid at a retail price, a practice known as net metering, can be unfair to the homeowners who do not want or cannot afford their own solar power installations. How's that for a stretch?
What?
We'll get into this a little bit more, but this is the type of logic you use on politicians. Pull at their heartstrings, so
and
you get your way.
This takes some mental gymnastics, and we'll reread that sentence, plus your calls and thoughts when we come back after the news. This is Free Talk Live.
If you want to move to the free state, and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warda.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Warden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing too. Invest in Liberty and property. Mark Warden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Kicking off our number three. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we're talking about rooftop solar. And, well, Saint Elon, patron saint of Musk cronyism, he's not happy. Because apparently, according to Bloomberg New Energy Finance, the installation rate of rooftop solar is declining to like 2%. It had exploded over the last 6 years to as much as 900%, according to one estimate. I'd like to see what the other estimates say.
Right.
But, you know, no matter how you wind up, you know, doing the math here, it's undeniable that a lot of people wound up installing rooftop solar panels. And again, the article from the New York Times says that there were a number of factors driving the installation, but also driving the reversal, including saturation in markets like California, as well as financial woes of top solar panel makers. And why would they be having financial woes? Maybe the fact that they've oversaturated certain markets where people are getting tax credits and being incentivized to do something that they wouldn't otherwise do?
Right. That's the whole scheme in all this. But let's go back to that last confusing sentence that we hit just before the news.
Yes.
Utilities argue that rules allowing private solar customers to sell excess power back to the grid at the retail price, a practice known as net metering, can be unfair to homeowners who do not want or cannot afford their own solar installations.
So let's sort of, instead of just translating this sentence, let's explain this a little bit more.
Sure.
So, Chris, you wind up calling up Elon Musk Enterprises because, you know, they're the only ones that really offers a good deal on rooftop solar. And you say, Mr. Musk, even though I don't like you and I don't like your company's business practices, I really want some of this rooftop solar. Can I have your people come put a solar panel or five on my roof here?
Right.
And they say, all right, sure. And then you wind up calling up, you know, whatever the power company is here in New Hampshire, and you tell them, hey, I got some solar panels put onto my roof. I'm going to need you to buy the excess energy
right
here. And they say, all right, well, we'll do that because we're required to, because, you know, we're basically, we've got a monopoly here. And
they say we got to do it. So
we've got to do it. But again, we've got a monopoly, so you can't really argue, and we can't argue against it because, you know, we're also cronyists because, you know, we like cronyism.
Okay, anyway, so the energy company buys
the electric company buys any excess that Chris has, and if he has not enough, then he winds up buying some electric from the power company.
Wait, so it's where kind does of a win-win. Elon Musk make his money?
Elon Musk makes money from selling the solar panels and government subsidies.
Elon Musk makes his money from government subsidies because nothing Elon Musk actually sells
is profitable.
Actually is profitable if you remove the government part.
Right. And let's finish deciphering the rest of this statement. So then I wind up calling the power company and say, you know, it's really unfair that you're giving Chris money for that extra energy that he's creating. You should give me extra money too. It's just unfair.
Now, the only way this makes sense is that I know that you, Daryl, are actually a lobbyist.
Yes.
You, Daryl, runs an organization called Liberty Lobby LLC.
Yes.
Where he lobbies on behalf of liberty issues. And it's
right.
a great thing. And I'm happy to donate to Daryl every month.
Right.
As
a lobbyist, I would not be arguing either way on this because, again, as I said with the healthcare thing, the options currently presented before any government entity,
right?
None of them are good, freedom options.
None of them are.
That there is not a get the government out of this option.
But I think what we have here is not the customers calling back in going, you know, it's really unfair that Chris gets some money back on his bill. I don't think customers are doing that. What the people that are doing that are telling people this is going on, are the utility company lobbyists. They're the ones that are saying, you know, it's just not fair to these other consumers.
I'm rereading the sentence here, and it actually says the utilities are arguing that it's not fair to the other companies. So it'd be
through their lobbyists
or Vermont Power or whoever saying, you know, it's not fair to some of our customers
right?
that other customers are getting money from us. And it would be the same as if they wound up saying, you know, it's really not fair that the guy that has the 500,000 square foot mansion on the lake pays more for his utility every month than the guy that's got the 500 square foot cabin in the woods.
Yeah.
It's not fair that people aren't paying the same for their energy. That's basically their argument in reverse, but they're never going to make that argument.
No, but they know that that's how you get the attention of any politician is to say, you know, it's really not fair to some of your constituents. It's you could lose votes over this. That's the implied threat. That's
right.
Always the implied threat. You run the risk of losing your seat. Their efforts have
Though we know that, there's not really much of a threat of anybody losing their seat because 90% of politicians that seek re-election wind up getting re-elected.
Right. Yeah.
Because who draws the boundaries? The politicians do.
There you go. Their efforts have met with considerable success, dimming the prospects for renewable energy across the United States. Prodded in part by the utilities campaign, nearly every state in the country is engaged in a review of its solar energy policies. Since 2013, Hawaii, Nevada, Arizona, Maine, and Indiana have decided to phase out net metering, crippling programs that spurred explosive growth in the rooftop solar market. Nevada recently reversed its decision. Many more states are considering new or higher fees on solar customers. Quote, we believe it's important to balance the needs of all our customers, unquote, Jeffrey Ostermeyer of Edison Electric Institute, the most prominent utility lobbying group, said in a statement. The same group of investor-owned utilities is now poised to sway solar policy at the federal level. Brian McCormick, a top executive at the Edison Institute, is Energy Secretary Rick Perry's chief of staff. The Energy Department did not make Mr. McCormick available for an interview. In April, Mr. Perry ordered an examination of
that's
power.
That's being Secretary, Energy Secretary Rick Perry, not me.
Not Daryl W. Perry of Free Talk Live. In April, Rick Perry ordered an examination of how renewable energy may be hurting conventional sources like coal, oil, and natural gas, a study that environmentalists worry could upend federal policies that have fostered the rapid spread of solar and wind power. Charged with spearheading the study due this summer is Mr. McCormick. There's no doubt these utilities are out to kill rooftop solar, and they're succeeding, said David Pomerantz, executive director of the Energy and Policy Institute, a renewable energy advocacy group. They're now driving the agenda. So, yeah, here we have, on one hand, the green side, which is right. promoting solar, even though it's not profitable. And they're right. saying that we have to take money from some people and give it to others. We have to redistribute wealth just so we can say we have more solar. Even though, when you look at the worldwide usage, the worldwide generation of power, solar plus wind does not move the needle. It is statistically, it's 0% globally of our power actually comes from wind or solar, but it doesn't have emissions. And if you support, you know, the Paris Accords, and if you support Al Gore, and you think that the Earth is about to burst into flames from global warming, then you're going to be on that side.
But if the Earth burst into flames, that's more heat to generate power thanks to these solar panels. So shouldn't we want more of them plus the flames?
I want to be left alone.
Your calls and thoughts, 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And have you ever wanted to start your own website or blog, but you've not been able to put that idea into action? Well, you're in luck, because HostGator, one of the top hosting companies out there, is offering a special deal to Free Talk Live listeners. Go to HostGator.com/FTL, and you can get up to 50% off their regular prices. Hosting your own website or blog can be intimidating, but HostGator makes it easy. HostGator offers a simple one-click, easy installation for WordPress, and they have 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-per-week, over-the-phone or live chat tech support, and a very intuitive and user-friendly control panel that puts the power of creation and the simplicity of use into the hands of you, the customer. HostGator also has a 99.99% uptime rating, so you don't have to worry about outages. To get that special offer of up to 50% off for Free Talk Live listeners, visit HostGator.com/FTL. We've been talking about solar, specifically the decline in the implementation of rooftop solar, where, according to the New York Times, over the last 6 years, according to one estimate, the rate of installation increased by as much as 900%. Now, again, it depends on how you wind up calculating that percentage, because if you start at 1 and then you wind up at, or if you start at 0 and wind up at 1, well, technically that's an infinite increase.
Right.
So, you know, the way some of these calculations are done are questionable. And again, that's according to one estimate,
right?
Not a bunch of estimates, or the, you know, industry recognizes that the increase is X.
But I think anybody who lives in warmer climates, sunnier climates, who's been there for the last 20 years could tell you that, yeah, those things have been going up all over the place.
Right. And I've even noticed here in New Hampshire some places that wind up having solar.
Sure.
Recently up in Lancaster, I noticed that the town of Lancaster has several solar panels that, you know, they're the ones that change direction so that it sure. can follow the sun.
Follow
whereas
the sun.
What's on your roof? Probably not following the sun. So if
the ones on the roof, I have to say, though, they're so ugly.
You don't like the look of that?
No, some of them, it just looks like a random Tetris block, like, landed on your roof. You know, it just, it looks funky.
Be good if it had the theme
song, too.
But,
you know, if you're in a northern climate and there's not a side of your house that faces south, well, rooftop solar is probably not something you want to go with because it's not going to be facing in a direction that gets maximum sun.
Yeah, I've got a couple of friends up here, and again, we're in New Hampshire, so, but, you know, they both have wide open southern facing areas that they were able to do this in, but they're not producing a lot. And
right.
The thing is, the further you go north, in wintertime, the lower the sun is on the horizon,
right.
And it doesn't take too tall a tree to start blocking the sun. And if you
right.
don't got the sun, you don't got no power.
And again, the article says that there's been a drastic decline in the rate of installation, and we're going over some of the reasons of that. Let's go to Skype, where we've got Bad Slave calling in. Bad Slave, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Thanks. One of the problems with solar energy and actually any kind of more distributed energy systems is that it's really regulated against the people with smaller installations. The nature of the public utility commissions everywhere, including New Hampshire, have been, in this mode of, big, huge power plants,
right.
even the nuke plants and all of that. Oh, that's much better than, getting, some wind or solar power, locally. And I completely disagree. I think that the right answer of a future very reliable power system is a very much distributed power system.
Agreed.
And that, wind and solar and small hydro and collecting sewer gases and whatever to turn a generator.
Right.
We had a thriving possibility of cogeneration of a home-sized cogen system, which made electricity and heat. And all of these things are, if the PUC and the utilities, took and wrapped their minds around the possibilities of these things, there would have been no limit to the solutions of the problems of providing power to the people.
I got to hop in here real quick, and this reminds me of books I've read and things like that, because I'm very much into the idea of alternative energy, and I'm not looking for government to come up with the solutions or to pay for it. I'm not asking you or Daryl or Heather to pay for my alternative energy so I can become energy independent at home.
Good, but because I don't want to pay for you to be energy independent. I want you to pay for it yourself.
Exactly. But a lot of these ideas, and I'll say with the exception of solar, the idea of trapping gases and burning them and spinning a turbine to generate electricity or to use windmills, we saw that. That happened back in the 1900s and the 1910s, when the idea of when electricity itself to be used this way was a new idea, to light one's home, to power right. appliances, and just entrepreneurs and people tinkering around in their garage, they're like, wow, you run a motor backwards and it generates. Well, why can't I do that? And these small hydro things, we were experimenting with that stuff. And as I've looked into a lot of designs, particularly in like the micro hydro, the idea that you take a very small stream and generate some electricity from it,
mm-hmm.
a lot of these designs go back to the 1800s.
Right. And I'm honestly surprised that there's not more of that micro hydro. It seems to me that all of the hydropower in the United States is this, let's massively disrupt the flow of a river hydro instead
yeah.
of put a small generator up under the current.
That's funny you guys say that, because when I ran for state senate in Massachusetts back in 2014, one of the things I had suggested in addition to the bloom box, which I've mentioned before, was putting hydropowered turbines in the Cape Cod Canal. Right. And like off the coasts of the islands, Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket, there's some of the strongest currents on the entire East Coast that are underwater that you could literally put one of the turbines there, and it had the currents were so strong that it could consistently produce enough energy to match hurricane force winds.
And the interesting, and it all
we'll hold you
we'll
over,
hold you over. But the thing is all that stuff like had legs and it was getting done until we got energy monopolies and things like that, which squashes all competition.
Right, and this is where the whole, you know, distributed aspect comes in of there should not be a monopoly on the, you know, source of power. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We're talking about solar power.
Right.
And wind power and, you know, the possibility of, you know, having a bunch of different sources of production of electricity instead of this one size fits all monopoly system to where some, you know, set of bureaucrats winds up saying, nope, you're the only person that can provide electricity. And well, because coal's been around longer than solar, you're going to do it with coal.
Right.
No.
Your calls and thoughts. Welcome. 855-450-FREE. We go back to Skype where we've got Bad Slave calling in. Bad Slave, continue with your thoughts.
Yeah, well, so I want to say that, you know, we've got the grid, and I want to say that the grid as it sits is a good thing, that the infrastructure that we can all use to benefit all of us. You know, for
I will disagree there.
I kind of see what he's saying.
Because one of the problems with the grid, and Chris, I'm not sure where you were living about a decade ago.
Well, can I say a little bit more about it?
Yeah, finish your thought.
Hold on. I just want to explain why I think the grid is a bad thing, and then I'll let you finish. I think it was about a decade ago when there was that, some part of the grid went down on the East Coast, and all of Pennsylvania and parts of New York wound up losing power because the grid.
Well,
there are small towns in northern New York that aren't tied into the grid. They weren't affected.
It's not perfect, but I think go ahead and continue your thoughts, Colin.
Yeah, well, so I can counter that perfectly, Daryl. The fact is that the grid is connects everyone, right? It doesn't just connect, you know, the big power companies to the small guy.
Right.
If we have a distributed power system, we can have many, many more breaks in the system that will allow the other parts to go down when there's some bad problem somewhere.
True.
And it not affect the rest. I'm talking about a fully distributed power system that basically allows somebody that wants to make 5 kilowatts in their garage can do it, as well as 100 kilowatts or a megawatt,
right,
you know, in a small, you know, factory or something like that. And you know, I mean, I've been hearing these stories about a guy who just, he had this wonderfully operating old diesel engine making his electricity. And, you know, by the fuel that he was feeding it, it was way cheaper than, you know, grid power.
Right.
And he didn't even have enough of a feed because he was using so much power. And for some stupid reason, they shut him down and made him buy some other lesser machine, and just it caused all kinds of problems.
Right.
And it was just an intervention, you know, by government, as we're so all of us against, that was just interfering with people's, you know, ability to, you know, go forward and
right.
produce.
I think the analogy I like to use, and this is where I would like to see the quote grid go, it's more like the internet. You know, the internet started because a bunch of companies agreed on some standards, and they voluntarily agreed to use TCP/IP as a transmission protocol and an internet protocol, and it works more or less. It could work better. But right now, the way the grid exists today is it's haphazard. It's sort of a state-by-state monopoly, and then we have these interconnects between different regions and different areas that makes our grid system very fragile. And I say very fragile because there's a lot of people that have looked at it a lot more in depth than I have, but its susceptibility to electromagnetic pulse or to solar storms or to a terrorist attack where you take out a couple key substations and you've wiped out power for half the country. So, and all I'm saying in that is it's not perfect, but I agree wholeheartedly with your concept that we should have the freedom to either use or produce our own power. Why not? And if we can tie it into a system where we could, you know, sell back or make available excess to other people or rent out our space, why not? This is a free market solution. That's
right.
Not a monopoly solution.
I think the free market solution, and Bad Slave, thank you for the call. I think the free market solution, if there were an actual free market, there would be multiple grids. There would not be the grid.
There could be. There certainly could be. But the cost, that's the barrier. I mean, it's not like, you know, I consider it a pretty remarkable accomplishment. I also consider our road system a pretty remarkable accomplishment.
Right.
It was all done by, you know, various parts of government and a lot of private effort, too.
Right.
As was our electric system. But now here it exists, and it spans virtually the entire country. There's very few areas that don't have power, and you know, if communities wanted to beef up theirs a little bit, more
right.
power to them.
And again, I'll point to the towns in northern New York that are not part of the grid. They
right.
have their own grid, and when the rest of the East Coast lost their power, these municipalities did not.
Yeah, which is great, and I think people should be able to secede from the grid if they wish.
And let's go to Sarah calling in from Albuquerque. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Oh, yes. I also wanted to add a little bit that all the Volvo cars will be all electric now. But the reason it's exciting that you're talking about energy.
Hold on. All cars are now electric?
No, Volvo cars will be electric.
Ah.
Is that correct, Sarah? That's what I heard you say?
I didn't hear the Volvo part.
Yes, all the Volvo, but I called because a pedestrian was killed like 2 days ago here in Albuquerque, and they got, it was 10 o'clock at night, and did you know that here, when they get killed and run over by two different cars, by two different drivers?
They all do?
So this one, yes, this happens like almost every other year. It was, it usually is at night, but the first car runs them over, and then the second one finishes them off.
Well, I could see that happening sometimes, but I don't think you could say that happens all the time.
Well, she said every other year somebody winds up getting run over by two cars all the time.
Yeah.
Right, here in Albuquerque, not where you guys live over there. You know what I'm talking about? Over here, it's we're number one in hit and run. They also hit you and then run off.
If I had lived in Albuquerque, I've come to the conclusion there's no way I am walking on your streets.
Sarah makes it sound like everybody that even, you know, like, looks at Albuquerque winds up getting run over by a car.
I'm going to buy a vehicle. I'm going to go to one of those Hollywood auctions and get something off of, you know, the set of Mad Max, and that's what I would drive in Albuquerque.
So, Sarah, what's your solution here? Ban automobiles? Ban pedestrians? Eliminate roads?
Well, you know,
give us a solution.
I'm glad the what I worked is that all of the new Toyota cars will have auto sensor brakes, laser, sonic, or something. The cameras. A lot of the people like Toyota, so all of the new Toyotas will have auto sensor brakes pretty soon.
If
the market will support it, I'm all for it.
So,
well, that's a start. And then,
is your solution to mandate that every car have this stuff, or are you just, encouraging the auto companies to follow Volvo and Toyota's lead?
Well, the thing is, I'm talking to the worldwide listeners that, did you know that 1.3 million people were killed in auto crashes worldwide and 40,000 in the United States?
Right, but what's the solution? Give us a solution, Sarah. Give us a solution.
Yeah, I'm talking to the worldwide listeners. Let's get mobilized and say that, we want computers in the cars. They're working on it. Let's hurry it up and put it out. I'm tired of hearing about it. They're planning to do it. Let's put it on. You know what I'm talking about? I know that, that I'm so happy that the Toyota is going to step it up by end of this year. 6 more months, all the new cars are going to have it. That's what I want to hear. I'm talking about they're planning to do it. They're thinking about putting all the cars, the computers talk to each other where they could
just don't mandate it.
Sarah, thank you for the call. Your calls and thoughts welcome here in the closing moments of Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Possibly time for you and your thoughts if you call in right now. We're talking about electricity, specifically the fact that apparently solar is on a decline. We'll get back into this article from the New York Times in just a second. But do you want to help build a better financial system for everyone? Well, join Dash. Dash is digital cash, a money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast, private, and easy. Fees are low, and transactions are fast and can even be confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime for just pennies. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and making governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the network. Join Dash and help create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. Find out more at Dash.org. There's a lot of momentum behind Dash right now, so go to Dash.org and find out why.
All right, so we've been talking about a large number of subjects tonight, but we have been focusing on energy.
Yes.
And that was our last caller who had talked about the grid and distributing energy, which
right.
is kind of the whole idea behind... I think one of the original ideas behind, doing solar at your house, you knew it was expensive. You knew you were going to make this big investment in solar panels, but in most parts of the country, you also knew that you were able to sell that excess power back to the power companies
right.
and defer your costs, which was kind of a cool idea. But, this is... whenever we have anything going on that is going to profit consumers or profit one party or another, you're going to have another party who's going to be lobbying government to do away with that. And in this case, we have the lobbying groups for the major power utilities.
And the power utilities themselves.
Sure. Lobbying lawmakers to pass laws to prohibit the consumers from being able to sell power back to the power companies
right.
at retail
and,
rates.
Again, it should be reiterated that in most cases, the local power company has a government-issued monopoly.
Right.
And they're not happy that, basically there's something akin to competition. It's not real competition.
But
there's
something dollars.
Akin to competition.
It's dollars flowing. Here's an analogy. They like their money to be like direct current. It only flows one way.
Yes.
The money flows into them. They don't like the idea of alternating current, where current goes both ways, where
Ooh.
Money's going back out and some's coming back in.
Nice electrical reference.
That's all right. I'm a geek. All right. We're going to continue on. And Basically, early on a March morning in the Indiana state capitol, under a mural of Greek sun god Apollo, solar energy enthusiasts formed a committee hearing to defend the state's embattled solar policy. A school superintendent said that his underfunded district needed solar power to reduce energy costs. A local farmer pleaded that his pine tree nursery depended on power from his solar panels. A Baptist pastor said he was drawing energy from the sun as, quote, an expression of our love of God's creation, unquote. The coalition was fighting a losing battle. A week before the Indiana committee hearing, a group of utility lobbyists descended on the state house, handing out talking points that said credits for rooftop solar panels lead to higher rates for everyone else. They were there to support a bill sponsored by Senator Brant Hirschman that would roll back Indiana's net metering system by reducing the rate utilities paid to solar consumers for their excess electricity.
And let's look at this a slightly different way. And I'm surprised that it's not mentioned here that, you know, also if you're creating your own electricity, then that's less money that the power company is winding up getting. And if they want to keep their profit margins at the same rates, they have to raise rates on everybody else. So not only are they spending money to buy your excess energy,
sure,
they're having to raise the rates because they're not getting your money.
Yeah. It would be one thing if all these things were happening in a free market. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because then the power company could say, well, I'm not going to pay you retail for that. I've got plenty of power already, but since you're hooked up to the grid, we'll give you a wholesale rate, or I'll give you 10 cents on the dollar or something like that for any excess that you contribute, and you can work a deal. And some people are going to say, you know what? Still worth it. Still going to do solar.
There would probably be people that say, don't give me anything. Just take it. I've got no use for all this extra energy.
Right.
Just take it.
Right. But those are the things that could evolve if we did not have these monopolies in place, and if we didn't have regulations at the state and federal level that are dictating how what should be a voluntary interaction between two consenting parties gets done. And,
right.
And to the point where they're setting the rate. Go ahead.
Like in a free market or whatever, like can capitalism, right, where like there's a monopoly on something in a free market, like what's the public solution to that?
There is, in a truly free market, there shouldn't be monopolies. You'll have companies that can become extremely large. And the example I like to use is Microsoft. You know, Microsoft was sued under antitrust laws left and right for being successful.
Right.
They just happened to do something so well that everybody pretty much bought it. And then they started to package their own other products into it.
Do you don't think that capitalism like can have its downfalls?
Well, it depends on where you're standing, and everybody, I think, at some point is going to have an issue with the idea of a free market. And I'll use free market instead of capitalism,
right.
Because sometimes it doesn't work in their favor. Sometimes they have to pay more than they wanted to for
right.
a product.
Having a free market does not guarantee that everybody's going to be a winner. It just guarantees that everybody has an equal opportunity.
Right. It's a pretty fair system. You know, you may not always like the outcomes, but if they apply equally to everybody, and you don't have government there saying, we're going to give this company a leg up because we like what they do. We like their message, or
we like Walmart. So we're going to give them this large piece of property that used to be a shopping mall. And we're going to waive all of the property taxes for the next 10 years. And we're going to wind up giving them this benefit and this benefit and that benefit.
And a new car.
And I was just going to say, you sound like you're on the Price is Right.
Right.
And then 10 years later,
Walmart
winds up leaving because, well, now they've got to pay property taxes and this and that and the other thing. And meanwhile, during that 10 years that they were functioning without having to pay property taxes, all of the nearby businesses went out of business because Walmart was able to artificially lower their prices.
Right. They had an unfair advantage.
That's not a free market.
No, it absolutely isn't. And we talk about that term, and all we can do, and I'm saying this, other than in very small circumstances, working with your neighbors and things like that.
Right.
Most people have never experienced a free market.
Right.
They have never participated in a free market other than, you know, maybe you bought some eggs from your neighbor who's got some chickens.
I think the closest most people have ever come to a free market, and most people don't realize this is a free market, farmer's market.
Yeah, it's a great example.
You go to a farmer's market, that is the closest thing you are going to find to a free market.
Right. Except, except oftentimes the farmer's markets are run by the town, who charges the renters a fee set by government, which right. may be extraordinarily high.
Right, and I didn't say it was a free market. I said it's the closest you are going to come.
I'll go with you on that. That's a good example, Daryl.
You know, and possibly maybe your next door neighbor has some chickens and he sells some eggs occasionally.
Yeah.
And, you know, even without you or him realizing it, there's a regulation that says as long as you're not doing it as your primary source of income, you can right. sell less than like $50,000 worth of, you know, home.
Right. And that's what's so insane, is that to participate in a free market, you have to follow regulation.
Right.
That's where we're at. And New Hampshire, I think, has a lot of laws that do sort of protect. There's a lot of laws that are written, like if your total dollar volume is less than X number of dollars, then you don't right. have to follow any of these regulations.
I think it's $25,000 for having a farm at home.
Or foods or kitchens or things like that.
There's no, well, the food stuff is going to be regulated by local ordinance. And I know because,
in some areas,
you know, right. They've put cease and desist against some of my friends for selling me a hamburger. But there's no business taxes as long as you're under $50,000 in New Hampshire. Things are a lot better here than they are in a lot of the country. That's it for tonight. We're always online at freetalklive.com.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on to join the Free State Project and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
Your amp will directly change more lives by getting Free Talk Live in front of people looking for talk radio online and on the air. You can help by joining the AMP program for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com and getting perks. That's amp.freetalklive.com.